This podcast is what I would consider part of my myth-busting series. It's entitled Living Off Debt. Nice work if you can get it. So, during the Ronald Reagan administration, someone figured out a way to use Social Security money as general revenue. And Reagan's successors just followed his example. The result was that $2.7 trillion or more by this point, which is alleged to be in the Social Security Trust Fund, was all spent for wars, tax cuts for the rich, and other government programs. In other words, there is no Social Security Fund. There's an IOU, $2 to $3 trillion, but just like our $20 trillion national debt, which that $2 to $3 trillion is part of, it's never going to get paid back. Social Security has moved from a fund to a real-time pay-as-you-go scheme or scam, whichever you want to call it. So here's the thing. We have not had a balanced federal budget since sometime back in the 50s. That means every year since then, the federal debt has increased. It has never decreased since then. If you don't believe me, look up the yearly growth of the national debt and try to find any year after 1960 that the national debt didn't increase. You can't claim to have a budget surplus when you just bumped up the overall national debt. Math just doesn't work that way. But wait, didn't Bill Clinton run a surplus? No, Virginia, Bill Clinton did not have a balanced budget. He only had the appearance of such, helped by the scheme outlined in paragraph one. That scheme not only allowed the excess Social Security funds to be used in the general budget, but by some magic that escapes me, the borrowed SS fund money was not the same as all the other borrowed and printed money. So it was not figured into the yearly debt. All right, let me take a side path here. I've heard this even recently, I believe during the Biden campaign, Hillary Clinton coming out, again claiming that her husband had a budget surplus for 2 years. It's claimed, I think, that it was maybe 1990 and 1991. The fact is that that was the midst of what's known as the dot-com boom. The dot-com boom exploded in 1999 and lasted about a year and then collapsed. And I mean collapsed. Look it up. You can look at the, I think it's the NASDAQ, and see the spike and then the total collapse. And what that did was that created a lot of extra money around, and that money created tax revenue. So let's see what that did. The fact is that Bill Clinton's so-called surplus was the result of two things. One, as I just stated, the dot-com boom. There was so much money around when the tech industry boomed, the tax revenue was extremely healthy. I'm going to call this revenue or receipts as opposed to liabilities or bills or whatever you want to call what has to be paid out. The budget, so to speak. Number two, borrowed Social Security funds that could be borrowed but not entered into the deficit line. That's what enabled Bill Clinton to pull this scam off. For some reason, and I have yet to understand it, when a budget is written and then the tax receipts are gathered, when there are not enough tax receipts to cover the budget, the money is borrowed. That creates a deficit that year, which is then added into the debt, which has never been any attempt to pay down. It just keeps rising. somehow when the Congress made this, came up with this idea to use SS funds, I guess because they were in reality receipts or revenue, in other words, you're paying Social Security every week, I guess they considered that revenue, so they took it and added it in to the other tax receipts, revenue, and didn't claim it as a liability on the balance sheet. So that I guess you could essentially, if you had enough money there, you could wipe out the deficit that year. However, it still created debt. So while we were fooled about the deficit, the debt continued to rise. And you can go to any site and search it out, and you can see what, I mean, 1999, I think, we had to 2000, we had the lowest increase in the debt, but there was an increase. We have never had the debt remain the same or decrease since years ago. So in other words, between the large tax revenues during the years of the dot-com boom due to the rise of the wealth and the yearly excess funds available from the SS fund to supplement tax revenue, no further money needed to be borrowed. So they had their tax receipts. They took what was left over from SS after all the recipients, the liabilities were paid off, and they applied that to the deficit. And they didn't have to go out and borrow any more money. So they call that a balanced budget. So while the budget books could be cooked to make it appear that Clinton had orchestrated a surplus, the debt owed to Social Security grew, and the bottom line of national debt grew as well. The lie of a Clinton surplus that Democrats, including Hillary Clinton, just recently have tried to foist on the American people is all smoke, mirrors, and lies. With that resolved, there's another myth that needs to be exploded. America's debt to China is no big deal. Fact is that many, many countries loan money to the U.S. because America is good pay. You don't want to loan to somebody who's bad pay, but if you know someone will pay you back, that's money in a bank. They like the interest and the safe investment of loaning money to America. So as we approach $30 trillion of national debt, if we haven't already hit it, a number that has for the first time in history exceeded the yearly gross national product of the whole country. Who holds all that debt? In other words, all the money that everybody makes in the U.S., the debt is now higher than that. So if we took every dollar that was made this year and applied it to the debt, we still wouldn't pay the debt off, and we'd all be broke. Okay, so the dirty little secret is that you hold all that debt. China and Japan, our largest foreign creditors, hold less than $1.5 trillion each of U.S. debt. Look, $3 trillion of debt that we owe China and Japan is nothing to scoff at, but it pales in comparison to over 70% of the national debt held by Americans, you and me. If you're counting, it's getting to be 25, 26 trillion, 27 trillion dollars owed to us by us. Because our elected officials do not know how to live within a budget. So at this point, it's not to alarm you any further, I will forgo diving into the topic of unfunded liabilities. That's a topic for another day. That's debt that has been promised to be paid to someone in the future, but is unfunded. In other words, I retired a couple years ago. The money I paid into Social Security is gone. It was paid to other people. The money I'm receiving from Social Security is being paid by you if you're still working. So that's referred to as unfunded liability because it's promised, but there's no guarantee of it. That unfunded liability is estimated by many different people to be in the range of $100 to $250 trillion, SS and Medicare in the future. All right, so who holds all that other debt, the national debt, the 25, 26, 27, other than the SS debt? All Americans. The borrowed money that has long been squandered has come from pension funds that loan money to government, of course, Social Security, banking institutions looking to loan money and get at least some type of return, and the Federal Reserve printing it. Now, while the money loaned to run the government by pensions, SS, and banking institutions is real earned money, the money loaned to the government by the Federal Reserve is what I call monopoly money. In other words, it's not backed by any real labor or earnings. Here's an example. The order is put in for $1 million. The Fed fires up the printing presses, loads the money in the suitcases, and delivers it to the Congress. Okay, it's an analogy. It's all on paper, really. But, in other words, nobody earned that money. They just wrote a check. Of course, they sent a promissory note to be signed by Congress to repay the loan someday with interest. There's the hook. The Fed prints money, loans it, charges you and me interest, and when, if it is ever repaid, the money is burned because it was never there to begin with. It's not real. It's printed, and it's ruining the dollar. Find out what the dollar used to be worth 50 years ago in today's money. So, we have a problem as I see it. In the past, the U.S. has run up debt and then repaid it, like during the wars. And I'm sure once the Congress waved goodbye to a balanced budget in the rearview mirror and the debt hit $1 billion and then $10 billion and then $100 billion and then $1 trillion, there was probably still an assumption it would ever eventually be paid back. But you know what is said about good intentions, right? All this, however, begs the real question of, will the national debt ever be repaid and by whom? If we can't get by without borrowing nearly a third of our budgetary needs every year, how will we ever begin to repay the $30 trillion and growing that we owe? You do the math. In fairy tale land, the burden of repayment will be squarely placed on the shoulders of our grandchildren. If we ever turn this around and start collecting more than we spend, that is, and it will take years to pay it off. Look, it took us 60 years to get here at the $30 trillion mark. How long do you think it will take to repay it while we're also paying interest on it? And if the interest rate goes up, you might wonder why the interest rate is near zero. That's one of the reasons. If the interest rate ever goes up to some 7%, you know, people used to get 7% on their money. Well, again, do the math. We owe $30 trillion with 7% on that. That's why people don't generally take loans with a fluctuating interest rate that they intend to hold over a long period. It could just get way too expensive. A variable rate mortgage is usually only held for the short term and then either repaid or converted to a desirable fixed rate mortgage. So when the rate is low and with a variable rate, they tell you, hey, if it goes down, we'll reduce your rate. Okay, that's good while things are working that way. But when the rate starts to go up, they're also going to increase it. That's when you exercise the option to lock it in. The national debt is equivalent to a variable rate loan. If money gets tight and interest rates rise, oops. Again, that might not happen because the people involved will work to keep the interest rate in the toilet. Of course, if you're looking for safe investment opportunities and are happy with the going rate, like say you're a retired person and you don't want to gamble your money in the market, you're screwed. When we play the loan money to the government at near 0% game. In other words, the interest rates on different kinds of loan money all follow the Fed rate closely. Can't pay you 5% interest and loan that money to the government for 1%. Now what? Okay. I've seen conspiracy theories about all the debt being wiped out and some sort of reset. I don't do conspiracies, though. And this is one that is much like the chemtrails conspiracy that propounds harmful chemicals are being released into the atmosphere. Here, look, poisoning a food or water supply can be worked. We can find a workaround. You establish a private food and water supply for yourself and poison everybody else's. But we're all breathing the same air. So while someone is harming others through poisoned air, how does someone protect his or her own family? I've been blocked by chemtrailers for raising that question. So what's the comparison? Well, if all the debt was owned by the rich capitalists and the promissory notes were all thrown in the trash, well, I don't necessarily recommend that type of behavior, but I wouldn't lose a lot of sleep worrying about the rich capitalists. Sure, I'm a capitalist. I'm what you might refer to as a poor capitalist. The problem is all that debt, if zeroed out, screws the American people. Remember, the pensions, all the Social Security. Do you know anyone who has retired with a pension and then that former employer went belly up and the pension plan collapsed? And that brings us to the reason student loans are guaranteed by the government. As a married man with two young children years ago, I considered going to school and sought a student loan when the student loan business was still in the private sector. I met all the criteria to receive a loan except one. The bank came back and informed me that it did not loan money to freshmen because the rate of default was too high. Too many kids dropping out and using the money for other things like cars and then not having the ability to repay the loan. So I didn't go to school at that time. Later on, I did. Then the government stepped in and began the guaranteed student loan program. In other words, while your 19-year-old could not qualify for a 20, 40, 75K loan, the government said, go ahead and loan the money, and the U.S. government will guarantee repayment. That also prompted the schools to go on a tuition-raising rampage. Because if the student agreed to attend at the exorbitant tuition many schools now charge, the government would guarantee the loan. So there was no incentive to go looking elsewhere. Hey, whatever it costs, the government's going to help me out. And then I'm going to get out and get rich. So began the student loan bubble, followed by the fantasy we're hearing now, student loan forgiveness, which is nothing more than another leftist lie. The debt, student loan debt, cannot be forgiven. The only entity or person that can forgive a debt is the holder of the debt. The government doesn't hold the debt. The banks do. The government's just guaranteeing it. So these politicians cannot forgive it. They can only cancel it and pay it back some other way. It can only be shifted onto the shoulders of someone else, the taxpayer. The bank loaned the money only based on the government promise to repay. And that's what you and I will do if the leftist scheme of student debt forgiveness comes to fruition. Unless, of course, the whole scheme enters default, then the bank depositors will be screwed. Again, you and me. And that means pretty much everything will collapse. Look, if I thought default was a workable solution to our debt, it would pretty much make all the wrangling about the recent COVID relief bill moot. I mean, go ahead and give everybody money. And up the relief checks from $600 to $2,000. Yes, the nearly $700 billion given away to foreign countries is the lion's share of the nearly $100 trillion package. But the increase in relief checks from $600 to $2,000 adds $200 to $300 billion to the bill. So while fiscal conservatives balk at the additional $300 billion of money we don't have, the big spending Republicans and Democrats didn't have a problem foisting the original trillion-dollar pork-laden bill onto the American people. It's a giant shell game, and the longer we can be kept in the dark, the better. In the end, my objective is only to draw attention to the fiscal problems that very soon are going to become up close and personal and affect how we all live our daily lives. Thanks for listening.